Yes.
I'm here. We go. Hello, yes. Rakan. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Rakan is going to be teaching a class on loving other Jews. Rakan is an author and educator. He lives in Givat Ze'ev, where he serves as rabbi of the Mishkan Etzion community. He's director of the Overseas Students Program in Bar Ilan, where he's a senior lecturer in Jewish studies. And his most recent book is 12. Wow. It's called The Crowns of the Letters. So, Rabbi Khan.
Thank you. And thank you for organizing this really important day. And it's absolutely my privilege to be able to speak. So I want to start with something which everybody knows, which, of course, accomplishes nothing by saying that other than making people who don't know it feel inadequate. So that's not my objective, but there's really a famous teaching, which is a teaching of Rav Kook, which I think is really quite problematic, even though it sounds great. And the teaching is that just like the Beit HaMikdash, certainly the second Beit HaMikdash, according to the Gemara, was destroyed because of Sinat Chinam, because we hated one another, so therefore the third Beit HaMikdash will be built because of Ahavat Chinam. So why don't I love this teaching? Even though the answer, again, the attitude is a wonderful attitude. But there's a little bit of a problem. And the problem is the concept of Ahavat Chinam. When I say Ahavat Chinam, there's an implication. The implication is that the person is not deserving of love because it's Chinam. Which means that I look at someone else and I have to go through a process and say, well, that person is really, now I can fill in all the blanks, he or she is terrible, they've done terrible things to me, and so on and so forth, I don't like them, they're different. And there's all kinds of reasons why we don't like people. We don't like people sometimes, or more often, because we don't know them. We don't like people because we know them superficially. We don't like people sometimes because we do know them, so I'm not going to ignore that either. But sometimes we know them in a particular way, and we don't like them. So now the question is, when we don't like somebody, are we justified in the not liking them? Which means, go back to a core issue. All of us know that there's a verse in the Torah, and the verse in the Torah says, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha ani Hashem, which means that we are obligated to love other people as ourselves. Certainly anybody who qualifies as a rea, havta l'reicha. So there could be some question exactly what the rea is, who is included in this. A rea would be a friend more than a neighbor, more than a shachen. A rea would be somebody where there is some kind of a connection. But v'astrech kamocha, so therefore I'm obligated to love other people. So the question is, does a Jew ever lose that? I mean, are there people that we are not obligated to love? Are there people maybe that we shouldn't love? Which means the concept of Ahavat Chinam is predicated on an assumption that there are certain people that we should not be loving. And by the way, I would like to assume that when Rav Kook says this, what his real attitude is not reality. It's rather attitudinal. It's our attitude. I think that that person is undeserving of my love, my respect, my caring, or my helping them in any way. And Rav Kook is then saying to us, not in terms of reality, but rather in terms of my imagination. Oh, you don't think that you should love them? You really should love them. So even if bivchinatcha, as far as you're concerned, that it's avat chinam, so that's going to help create this, because therefore it gets reduced to a strategy. On the other hand, there are people who are people who have done terrible things. People who, and maybe I'll have another sentence first. There are, in any legal system, but in Judaism and halacha as well, there are obligations and there are privileges. A person who doesn't live up to their obligations can lose those privileges. Now, as much as we don't like to think about that, that's nonetheless the case. You know, there is a Gemara that says, Afo pi shechata, Yisrael hu. Yisrael, afo pi shechata, Yisrael hu. A Jew is always a Jew, is always a Jew, is always a Jew. So I have one question after saying that. Is that really the case? Which means, does a Jew always retain all privileges of being a Jew? Or can they come to a point where a Jew can forfeit privileges? So that may not sound like such a simple point, but of course we can lose privileges. We can lose love. And again, I want to be clear. We can no longer be a rea. we can be terrible people, again, on a most basic level. There is somebody who is a nice Jew and asks me for a ride, I'm going to give them a ride. What if this person is not a nice person? What if this person is a terrible person? You can fill in the blank, whatever you understand as being the most despicable possible behavior, which would then tell me that not only should I not be helping this person, I perhaps should be doing far worse. I should be reporting them to the police. I should, again, do I have to give that person a ride? Do I have to help open my door for that person? There are people that lose privileges in this world. Again, it's very sad, but nonetheless, that is the case. So therefore, when it says that a Jew is always a Jew, is always a Jew, Yisrael af apisha chata Yisraelu, that's not really the case. So therefore, again, I want to go back to this point of Rav Kook, that Yisrael af apisha chata Yisraelu, or Rav Kook then saying that ahavat chinam, does he really mean for me to give love to the person who is perhaps undeserving of this type of love? So, I'm going to actually show you a passage from the Gemara which will address this point, and part of what we're going to learn as we proceed is that the point of Rav Kook may not have been all that unique. There may have been others that came before, and he was just articulating this in a very interesting way. But when a person ends up losing those privileges, what does it nonetheless mean that Yisrael af apicha shechata Yisrael hu? So I'm going to give you a very sad and tragic definition of it. Let's say there's a Jew who denies God. Let's say there's a Jew who therefore leads their life in the most horrific way possible. And again, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that just because a person is an atheist will mean that the person will leave their life in a terrible way. There can be atheists who are very, very, very moral and very, very decent. But I want to go to an extreme right now. There's a story which is told of the Vilna Gaon, where an individual who he had met was somebody who essentially said that I do not believe in Judaism, and therefore, well, let me get to the therefore. So this person sat with the Vilna Gaon, and there was a cup of water in front of him, and he started to pick it up, and the Vilna Gaon said, well, you have to say bracha. And he said, but I don't believe in anything. And the Vilna Gaon responded and said, the fact that you don't believe, do you think that that's going to cause God not to judge you in a day of judgment? You think that just because a person doesn't believe or doesn't accept, therefore, any and everything that they do is now allowed? God is going to say, oh, I didn't get the notice. You didn't believe in me, or you don't care what I said, or you reject what I say, and therefore you have free license to do anything you want. So the Vilna Gaon said quite the opposite. It's exactly the phrase that I described. Yisrael af al pi shechata, a Jew who sinned, Yisrael, they're still a Jew, and therefore they're responsible for the sin. Which means when we say that a Jew can never convert out, as it were, you can never lose the status as being a Jew, which, by the way, again, is not so simple. A Jew can lose every single privilege of being a Jew. They could, to the extent that anything that you can imagine that a Jew can do, they can no longer do. Simple things. Can they do shechita? Could they, here's an interesting point. A non-Jew, who's an idolater, could send a korban, an offering to the Beit HaMikdash, in order to be accepted. If a Jew becomes an idolater, they can no longer send a korban to the Beit HaMikdash. Their becoming an idolater precludes the ability for them to send a korban. That's it. They've lost that status. They've lost that ability. And in a certain sense, you understand it's even worse than the status of a non-Jew, because a non-Jewish idolater can still send the offering. So of course a Jew can lose all kinds of privileges. Nonetheless, they have full responsibility, and we never lose those responsibilities. So again, is this what Rav Kook is referring to? So I want to share with you a little back and forth between one Gemara and a second Gemara, and an attitude of Tosfot, and I mentioned the Vilna Gaon. So now, for good form, I'll mention something written by the Bala Tanya as well. So let's take a look at some of the sources. There is a Gemara that says, really based upon the verse in the Torah itself, I hope you can all see this. Yes. It says as follows in Parshat Mishpatim, Shmot Perek Kav Gimel. Ki tirecha morson acha rovatz tachet maso, v'chadalta mi'azov lo, azov tazov imo. If you see somebody, over here it says, son acha. So now the question is, somebody who the relationship is one of hatred, and they have a burden, it says, don't stop, you should help them. Now, the basic way to understand this is because there's a thing which is called Tzar Ba'alei Chaim. Tzar Ba'alei Chaim means that just because you can't stand this person, it doesn't mean that the animal should suffer for this reason. If you look over here at source number 6, the Gemara in Baba Metzia, Daf Lamed Bet says, Tashma, come in here. You have two people. One person needs help to load up a donkey, and the other person needs help to unload the donkey. Tashma, Ohev Lefrok, somebody who is your friend needs help to unload the donkey. Visone Litaon, and the person who you can't stand needs help to load the donkey. Mitzvah Visone, there's a mitzvah to help the person that you hate. Now, I'm going to pause there because this is completely, completely difficult to understand. So let's try all over again. The line before in the Gemara says that Tzar Ba'alei Chaim may very well be a Torah law, which means that we cannot cause needless pain even to animals, by the way, certainly not to people. So there's two relationships compounded by two relationships. One relationship will be someone who you like and someone who you can't stand. Second relationship will be in terms of what it is that they need help with, in terms of the action. Do they need help to load up the donkey or they need help to unload the donkey? So the Torah says if there's somebody who you don't like, you should even help them, even them you should not ignore, and help them unload the donkey. Well, why help them to unload the donkey? Because just because you can't stand them, why should the innocent donkey suffer and you're obligated to help them? So all that becomes perfectly clear. So therefore, if I have two people, let's say, are my friends, one needs help to load a donkey, one needs to unload the donkey, who should I help? Answer, I should help the person unload because that donkey's already been traveling a bit, is already exhausted. Tzar Ba'alei Chaim, help the person unload the donkey. Both of them are equal. They're both friends. I like them both. Now, what if the person needs help unloading the donkey is an enemy of mine and the person needs help loading the donkey is a friend of mine? Now, I would want to help my friend, but nonetheless, Tzar Ba'alei Chaim, I have to help the person with the animal that's in pain. So that becomes the correct behavior. So now let's try one more time. What if the person who needs help to unload the donkey's been traveling, Tzar Ba'alei Chaim is my best friend, and the person who needs help loading the donkey is somebody who I can't stand. So what should Torah law instruct me to do to help my friend unload the donkey? Tzar Ba'alei Chaim, helping my friend, v'haftarech kamocha, and everything makes perfect sense, except for the Gemara that I just now read. The Gemara now says something, which I hope you're going to notice with me, is completely, completely, well, it's not just that we wouldn't have anticipated it. It seems to go completely against the inner logic of what we had considered till now. So let's take a look again. Toshma, come in here. The Gemara introduces the concept. Ohev lifrok. The person who's your friend needs help to unload, v'soni l'ta'on, and the person you can't stand needs help to load the donkey, mitzvah v'sone. There's a mitzvah to help the one you don't like. Why? Kidei l'chof et yitzro. In order to push your yetzer hara. And again, this is something which I want to understand and I want to consider. Because what would be going on in my mind at that moment if I followed what Torah law should have led me towards? I would have turned to my enemy and said to my enemy, listen, I'd love to help you, but Tzar Ba'alei Chaim, I got to help my friend over here. I got to help his donkey. And what would have been accomplished over here? Well, again, I could say Torah law would have been accomplished. I helped the donkey and I helped my friend. But my question is different. Would I then be a better human being afterwards? How would I feel? What would my internal world be? And my internal world, I know exactly what it would be. I'd be looking at this guy that I can't stand, say, listen, I'd love to help you. And deep down inside, I'm laughing and saying, I'd love to help you, but isn't the Torah great? Because the Torah here for, in this case, has instructed me to help this other person, and therefore I can't help you. And what would have enjoyed that mitzvah? Here's really the question. Would my Yetzer Tov have enjoyed that mitzvah? Or would my Yetzer Hara have enjoyed that mitzvah? I know that's a difficult question, but every now and then we have to ask ourselves that. Which means when I'm doing something, and I'm even doing a mitzvah, what is being energized? My Yetzer Hara or my Yetzer Tov? And what should the right answer be? When I do mitzvot, it's my Yetzer HaTov, which really should be energized. In this particular case, it's not your Yetzer HaTov that would have felt really good. It would have been your Yetzer Hara. Even though you're doing the right thing, even though Tzar Ba'alei Chaim. By the way, remember I said before that when it comes to Tzar Ba'alei Chaim, the Torah law is that you're not allowed to hurt an animal without any purpose. So why was I allowed to load the donkey up in the first place? What's the answer? There was a purpose. Why am I ever allowed? I mean, I you know, once took my kids horseback riding, and I asked the person who ran the place, I said, did the animal feel pain? Because maybe the purpose of me enjoying the afternoon with my kids is not a good enough reason to cause pain to the animal. And he said to me, well, maybe it was a convenient answer for him, but he said to me, no, the animal would not feel the average person, and the animal would actually enjoy this, and he gets out and gets some exercise and gets to run about rather than be locked up and so on. So therefore, the animal not only doesn't have pain, but enjoys it. But by the way, I the truth is that if human need dictates some animal suffering, that is, I'm going to say, unfortunately allowed. Otherwise, we would not be allowed to let an animal even plow a field for us or do anything for us. But Tsar Bale Chaim is not an absolute law. Causing an animal pain is not an absolute law. It's unnecessary pain where there is no human gain involved in it. So I'm allowed to hook up the animal to the plow and have him plow the field. And again, that's clearly stated in the Torah. I just can't cause pain where there is no justified human gain from it. And of course, we could debate in other contexts and other places what is considered to be human gain or what is justified human gain. And obviously, that is a very good question. So going back to this, if the human being is enjoying, if the human being's Yetzer Hara is enjoying the performance of this mitzvah, then there's something wrong and the animal will have to wait another minute or two as you help the person who you don't like load up the animal. Because over here there is a justification. And what's the justification? The poison in your own heart, the poison in your own soul. So therefore we learn a really interesting law here by this Gemara in Baba Metzia. The Gemara is teaching me that if I hate another Jew and I'm enjoying it, and I'm acting on it and so on, there's something really wrong about this. Now, Tosfot is going to raise a question about this. And Tosfot's question is going to be in another place, another Gemara, and let's look at the other Gemara and then we'll be able to understand the Tosfot as well. The Gemara in Psachim, well, I'm going to look for the key line, it's source number 5, but we don't need all of this. The Gemara over here questions. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Yitzchak. We'll put that bold so you can see it. Amar Rav. There are certain cases, mutar lisnato. There are certain people that you're allowed to hate. So what are we talking about? We're talking about somebody, for lack of a better technical term, is a creep. Mutar lisnato. Shenema ki terecha mor sonacha rovetz. And it goes back to our verse. You see somebody who you hate. Now the Gemara wants to know, hold it, why do you hate him? Do you hate him because you are a small person? Do you hate him because you're jealous of him? Do you hate him because you have no reason to hate him? Or do you hate this person because this person is a creep, a bad person? This person did things which all of us would have a consensus. The person is a rapist. The person is somebody who should be behind bars, maybe, best case scenario, maybe other places. Who's this person that you hate? Are we talking about a non-Jew? No. We have a tradition, it's a Jew. But lo sone kuti, not a non-Jew. Ela pshita sone Yisrael. Vayichidami. Idaka avid Yisura, shari lemisne. Now the Gemara said something really interesting. If the person is a sinner, ida avid Yisura, shari lemisne, you're allowed to hate somebody. Idlo ka'avid v'lo midi mi shari lemisne. And he hasn't, if he's innocent, then why are you allowed to hate them? V'hagtiv, but it says, lo tisna t'achicha bilvavecha. Now notice the word here is achicha. Someone who is like your brother, but that means somebody who is a good, decent, upstanding citizen, you're not allowed to help. Elo di'ika sadi t'avid yisur. No, we're dealing with somebody who there are witnesses that this person has done something wrong. So people really are allowed to hate him. And I don't want to go any further into this text, but this text is going in and by the way, the end it says, no, we know this person has done something which is morally wrong. This is not an innocent person. And you're allowed to hate this person who is not innocent. So then Tosfot asks a simple question by putting our two sources together. Again, one said that if the guy that you can't stand needs help with the donkey, even loading the donkey, you should do it. Why? L'chovet Yitzro, to force your Yitzhara. Now look at Tosfot. Shirabo Dvar Erva, source 7. We're dealing with somebody that you know that they did something immoral. Ve'im Tomar, if you're going to ask, the Ela Metziot, the Gemara Baba Metzia, Amrinan, we said, Ohev Lefrok, the person who you like needs help to unload the donkey. Visone Litone, the person you can't stand needs help to load the donkey. Mitzvah Bisono, there is an obligation to help the person you don't like. Why? Kidei Lechof Et Yitzro, in order to force your Yetzer Hara. By the way, why is that Yetzer Hara then? If this person's an evil person, it should be Yetzer Hara. Maybe it's Yetzer Tov. And Tosfot asks, "V'hashta ma'kfiat yetzer shayach came with the mitzvah l'sonoto. Why would that be called the yetzer hara if there's a mitzvah to help to hate this person, as the Gemara just suggested?" So Tosfot gives an answer which maybe we understand and maybe we don't understand. He says, "V'yesh lomar." He says, "Kevin shehu sono, you hate him. Gam chaver sonoto, and he's going to hate you. Dichtiv kamayim ha'panim la'panim." Kein leva adam la adam, that there's very often a mirror effect, that people will respond the way that you respond to them, and if you hate them and you think they're justified, or they're going to hate you and they think they're justified, we're going to end up with the world where everybody is justified to hate everybody. And Tosfot then concludes, uva'in mitoch kachli de sin agamura. And then we're going to get to real hatred. Now the question is, what's real hatred as opposed to imaginary hatred? V'shach k'fiat yetzer. And then we can apply this concept of trying to subdue our evil inclination. Now, I hope that all of you are still with me and what I'm saying is making some kind of sense, but I'm really going to try to explain this as we move on. The Gemara, on the one hand, had told us that there are times that we're allowed, we're permitted to hate someone. That was the Gemara in Pesachim. On the other hand, we found a Gemara in Bab Metzia that says, oh, this person who you hate, he needs help with his animal, you better go ahead and hate him. So what would be the rationale for that? Tosfot told us, because we don't want to get to real hatred. But hold it a second. There are people who are not decent. There are people who are immoral. There are people who are not deserving of our love. I'm sorry to put it like that. But, you know, I try to give examples. I hope not to trigger anything, but I wanted to get to examples that I think we'd have a consensus that there are people that are not deserving of our compassion. There are people whose behavior has really precludes that. Nonetheless, Tosfot said, yeah, but you hate him, he'll hate you, we'll get to real hatred. So I want to show you something which it says in the Tanya, which I think is really in line with, I think, the educational values that most of us have and most of us imagine is really quite modern, and maybe don't imagine that a source would have said it from a couple of hundred years ago. So let's take a look again. The Tanya is, and this will give you a way to always remember it, it's in chapter 32. Chapter 32 is Lev, having to do with heart. And the Tanya says as follows. Here it is, source 19. And that regarding to what it said in the Gemara, when it says that when you see your a friend or somebody who had sinned, it's a mitzvah to hate them. Again, it's really strong. By the way, if I go back to Rav Kook now, Rav Kook said sinat chinam. So ahavat chinam. Where would ahavat chinam be? It would be in a case where you're not obligated to love them. And I'll just say as an aside that Rav Kook's mother did come up from a Chabad family. And there's no question that he grew up on the Tanya, and he grew up on these teachings. V'gam lo l'rabo shisno. Not only that, the Gemara continues, you're allowed to even tell your teacher, report, tell on what this person has done. Hainu, now listen to how the Tanya limits this teaching. When are you allowed to not like somebody? And again, you have to stay with me to the end. Hainu b'chaviro b'torv mitzvot. That's only regarding somebody who is a good, decent, religious person. That's the person that you're allowed to hate. He's going to qualify this, so give me a couple seconds. And you have already fulfilled your obligation by speaking to them and explaining to them and giving them tochecha and explaining what exactly the issues are involved over here. Am she'itcha b'torav mitzvot. That's amitecha. Am she'itcha b'torav mitzvot. V'yafol kin lo shav mecheto. But if nonetheless this person didn't improve, k'ma she'ketav b'sefer charedim v'misha einu chavero. But somebody who's not your friend, a person who you can't have the honest conversation with, a person who you can't point out their flaws, a person who there is tension already, the einu mekarav etzlo, someone who you're not friendly with. Hine al zeh amar Hillel hazaken, regarding that person, Hillel said, havei mitamidav shel Aharon, that's the reason I chose to teach this today, because Aharon said, ohev shalom, v'radev shalom, ohev et abriyot, umar karvan la Torah. So you're saying, who are you allowed to hate? Only somebody who who's your friend, and you've completely fulfilled the obligation in terms of rebuking, giving tochacha. But someone who's not your friend, oheva to briyot mekavran la Torah, lomer she'af harechokim mitorat Hashem, even people who are far away from the Torah of God, vavodato and serving God, ulechein nikram b'shem briyot be'alma, people who are not even called, from the Tanya's perspective, normative people, as it were, regular citizens of Israel, tzarech lemashkan b'chavle avatut ahava, you have to reach out to them with cords of love, v'kulei hay v'ulay yuchal l'karvan l'torah, and every, you know, all skills that you have to bring them close to Torah, v'ovadat Hashem, and to serve God, v'hin lo hifsid schar mitzvat ahavat re'im. But you should realize something, that person, who you may have an obligation not to, again, to hate, he said something interesting. He goes, the only person you have an obligation to hate, as it were, is somebody who you are close to and fulfilled your obligation of warning them, and they don't care. Somebody who never received an education, somebody who's far from Torah, far from mitzvot, that person, you certainly have an obligation to reach out with love. And now he goes back to the person who you may be allowed to hate, he said, but nonetheless, lo hifsid schar mitzvat ahavat ra'im, v'gam ha'mekoravim eila, v'hochicham, v'lo shavu mi avnotayim. And regarding that Jew, who is your friend, who sins, and you've warned them, and they don't return from their sins, shem mitzvah lisno'atam, where you understand that there's an obligation to hate them, here the Tanya says, mitzvah la'ahavam gam kein. You also have mitzvah to love them. B'shneim him emet, and they're both true. And here he finally says what I think all good parents should know. Sin'a mitzad hara shebahem. Hatred should only be regarding the aspect of the personality which is negative. V'ahava mitzad b'chinat ha'tov ha'ganuz shebahem. And love regarding sometimes the hidden aspect of God within them. Shehem shehu shebahem shehu nitzutz elokut shebetocham. And that is the spark of God within them. So when we read this passage of the Tanya, and again I'm going to remind you that Rav Kook grew up with the Tanya and grew up in such a home, he said something interesting over here. He's saying that there are certain people you're allowed to hate, but nonetheless, even those people were still obligated to love, and this is not a contradiction, because you hate not the person, you hate the negative aspects or behavior, but the person, there's still something to love. And by the way, now you realize that's a challenge. And I'll go back to Rav Kook's point about ahavat chinam. Maybe in our hearts, to love such a person really is ahavat chinam. How can I love such a person? How can I love a person who's done such terrible things? So again, that seems to be exactly what Rav Kook is telling us, is that realize that the sinat chinam is what destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. And by the way, the flip side of my problem with Rav Kook, and again, I'm saying this, I don't want to say facetiously, but I'm saying it in a way that you need to pay attention. The difficulty is that none of us ever believe that our sin'ah is chinam. Every single one of us can justify why we really are allowed to hate the other person. And I've just now given you an argument why sometimes that may even be the case, which means you get what's really going on over here. The Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because of sin'at chinam. Why was it sinat chinam? We didn't think it was sinat chinam. We thought it was justified. You think Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, in the famous story, each one didn't think that they were justified in their behavior. And the Marsha, by the way, points out that Kamtza and Bar Kamtza were most likely father and son. And what happens in that story is that, again, at least the way that the Marsha is reading it, is that Kamtza's best friend is this guy who's this enemy of Bar Kamtza. And he gets this invitation by mistake, and he thinks that his father must have worked to fix this relationship. So the sinat chinam over here, you sometimes think your hatred is justified. It may not be justified at all. We may be exaggerating. We may be thinking we're justified in our thoughts, our feelings, our behavior. Although, again, I do want to understand that there are times that people really are undeserving of they've lost that status. And there are many halachic sources that go beyond what the Tanya said over here. But nonetheless, his point was well taken. I can't possibly speak of somebody who I'm permitted to hate unless I've fulfilled all the possible obligations in terms of education. One of the first people who pointed this out was the Rambam. The Rambam says there are certain people who are really outside of Judaism in terms of their behavior. But then he says, but what about their children? What about their grandchildren? What about their students? What about people that are impacted? And the Rambam calls them, quote, Tinuk Shenishba, that there are Jews who were not brought up with such an education. They don't know any better. And therefore, your ability to treat these people with disdain is severely limited. Because, and the Rambam, by the way, you'll realize now, okay, I'll show you the text. And it's actually quite harsh until you, again, see the qualification. The Rambam starts off and saying, there are people who, just for non-belief, disbelief, the Rambam is saying, these people, umitato b'kol adam, that was censored out of the Rambam, that person, the mitzvah of v'chayechichimach, lo tamod adam riecha, the Rambam believes that all those verses don't, that this person has forfeited that. He said, "Velo ma'alin, you don't have to save this person's life." Again, they completely have lost this status, and the Rambam goes further and calls this person a cancer in the midst of the Jewish people. So again, I need to qualify. The Rambam is talking about years ago in a different time, in a different place, and I really want to learn this together, this passage, as difficult it is. But look at Halacha Gimel. B'med dvar morim, what are we talking about? B'isha kafar b'torah shebal peh b'machshavato v'drim shenirim lo. The person himself is rebellious against Torah. The person who starts a revolution. All who start revolutions. Their children, and the Rambam brings a current example. The Karaites in his day, people were raised in this way. It's like the proverbial Jewish child who tragically was kidnapped and vigidlu and raised among the non-Jews and doesn't know Jewish tradition. And here the Rambam qualifies even further and explains, Ve'enu zariz lachoz v'darkei mitzvot. Shrehu ka'anus v'afo pisha shema charkach. Shuyudi v'rayudim. It's a very important line the Rambam says here, that there are Jews who have met religious Jews. That doesn't obligate them to drop their education or drop the way that they feel. The Rambam says, rather, let's continue a little more. Let me give you an example. I don't know if you've ever witnessed this. It was more popular years ago. You could drive through certain neighborhoods in Jerusalem on Shabbat, and those roads are closed very often, and if you actually drive through, so more likely than not you would have, I don't know about today, you would have received a rock through the window or bouncing off the car and somebody yelling Shabbos. So now, the person who yelled Shabbos, what do they expect? Do they expect the person to stop the car, park the car and say, wow, I forgot it's Shabbos, I have to go say Kiddush now, let me go to shul, I'm going to go daven? I can assure you that that had never happened. No one ever received a rock that hit his car and said, okay. Now, again, is this really what the Tanya was describing earlier? Is this the person who you rebuke them and you speak to them? But he says, no, you speak to them with love. You have to reach out to such people. But the rock in the window never worked. There's a famous story about the Chafetz Chaim. Rabbi Riskin, wrote about this story. I'm sure he has told it as well. Where there was once a student in the yeshiva, the Chafetz Chaim, and that student was guilty of breaking Shabbat, and he was thrown out of the yeshiva. But the way the story goes, he sat down and he spoke to the Chafetz Chaim for what seemed like 1 or 2 minutes, and the person came back to the yeshiva and became a Baal Tshuva. And the way I heard the story is that Rabbi Riskin said that he once told of the story and said he would do anything to know what the Chafetz Chaim said to him. And he said as he told the story, there was an old man that he saw was in the audience who literally started to shake. This old man came over to me afterwards and said, "Ania Gever, I'm the guy. That happened to me. I was the student." And he starts to tell the story how his parents sent to yeshiva and he really wasn't into it and he really, that wasn't him. Nonetheless, he knew that he couldn't just go away from yeshiva. He knew he had to get kicked out. So, I think it was smoking on Shabbat or something like that, and they caught him. And he said the one thing that he didn't take into consideration was having to confront the Chafetz Chaim. So he was told that he had to speak to him before he leaves. So he goes to his house, knocks on the door. He hears a voice says, "Come in." And he sees the Chafetz Chaim sitting there. Chafetz Chaim reaches out and touches his hand and doesn't say a word. And he says it seemed, he didn't know how much time had gone by, and it just seemed like an enormous amount of time. And he said the Chafetz Chaim started to cry, and his tears fell down and landed on his hand. And he said it burnt his hand, the tears of the Chafetz Chaim. And finally he said one word, Shabbos. And then he said another two words, Heilige Shabbos. And the man then said that the Shabbos that I broke was not the Shabbos that the Chafetz Chaim was crying about. Which means, you know, you can throw a rock at a car and yell Shabbos. It's not going to work. Or you can take somebody's hand like the Chafetz Chaim and try to explain what Shabbos really is. And there's a better chance of that working. This is really what the Rambam is saying, is people who were raised. Now, again, you can question, hold it, this guy in the story was a religious guy. The Chazon Ish, who's not exactly known as being the most lenient of people, the Chazon Ish says this applies to everyone in our generation. There is so much disbelief in the world. There, the feeling of disbelief is such that the kid who, you know, years ago, who studied high school biology and somebody said there's such a thing which is called evolution, so then they have a crisis of faith. How can I possibly believe? In today's world, one can go onto any one of dozens of different websites and find all kinds of reasons why they should not believe. Chazon Ish anticipated all of this, and I do want to stress something which I heard from Rav Amital. He wrote about this as well, that the Chazon Ish and Rav Kook and the Chafetz Chaim, all of them lived before World War II, before people were able to ask this incredible question, where in the world was God during the Holocaust? What in the world happened over here? Before people had questions of theodicy. The person who grows up today and just can't get past that point, how can God allow 6 million people to be killed? I'm going to stand and judge them? Okay, if that sounds easier to you, and the survivor themselves, the person who lost their family, the person who lost their family in Auschwitz, I'm going to stand and judge that person. How can I possibly judge them? So I'm saying what the Chazon Ish says before the war, and I'm assuming he said he died in 1953, where if Cook certainly said before the war, how much more so after the war can we possibly judge people who don't have belief? And I know that there are counters and the other arguments we can give. But I want to read one more source, which was long before almost everybody I quoted today. It after the Tanya, before Rav Kook, so, but also from a Hasidic work, a Hasidic book, which is not well known. So just in case that all of you are thinking right now that everything I quoted you've already heard, so let me quote one thing where at least there's a better chance that you haven't seen it yet, and maybe it's worthwhile for us. I'm citing from a source which I stumbled upon. I had recently moved to a new house, and I had the wonderful opportunity of going through all my books, being told by my wife I had to get rid of some because we didn't have room. And I came across an article which quoted this book, which is called Shalom Yerushalayim. I ended up finding it online and downloading it, and it was written by, I want to be careful, the Kutzker Rebbe, but he's not really the Kutzker Rebbe. It's Reb Chaim Yisrael Morgenstern. The Kutzker Rebbe was his grandfather, whose name was also Morgenstern. Nechto shel Rebbe Menachem Mendel Mikutsk. The grandson of Menachem Mendel Mikutsk, as you can see his years here, he was born in 1840 and he died in 1905. And he became a great Zionist. When I say Zionist, it's early to talk about a Zionist in terms of Herzl or Weizmann and so on. He was a lover of Zion. He felt Jews should all move to Israel. He was very interesting that his own family had a hard time with how much he felt that Jews should be in the land of Israel. He wrote in this essay, which by the way was not published in his life, a number of things which were interesting, and it actually generated a lot of discussion and debate. There are a number of people, Rav Yosef Engel, who was very, very well-known, Achron, wrote a long essay responding to something which was written over here. Also, the Avni Nezer wrote a number of tshuvot, which were published, which were responses to what were written over here. He was very strict in terms of the possibility of relying on what we call the Heter Mechira. So we don't get confused. I am very strong in the possibility of relying on that to Mechira. So don't assume that because I'm quoting this that I identify with it. Not at all. And as I said, it's not just me. It was Rav Yosef Engel and it was the Avnei Nezer who strongly disagreed with him. But essentially he said, if we're going to come to Israel and live in Israel, we need to know why the temple was destroyed. One of the things which we learn in the Tochacha and Parshat Bechukotai is the idea that the land did not keep the sabbatical year, that we did not keep Shemitah. And he says, if that's the case, if we want to deserve to live in the land of Israel, we need to keep Shemitah properly without cutting any corners. And if we can't do that, we're better off staying outside of the land of Israel. Okay, I understand that, and I'm going to stress something out. That's an interesting perspective for somebody who lives prior to the Holocaust. I think after the Holocaust, we have a whole different discussion. Jews living outside of Israel, it's not me. Perhaps it's not the best idea. And now there's a whole new reality, and this reality are millions of Jews who are living over here. The reality of the Het Mechira is one which allows them to live here. I'm not going to go any further into this now, but I'll just say is that the imagination of a dreamer living when he lived, you can judge how long ago this was, in a different reality, thinking that the few and the special who merit to live in Israel should keep every single stringency. It's interesting. It was expressed by others. It will explain to you why in Bnei Brak and in Mei Sha'arim there are those who don't follow halacha in the same way that it was followed in the various shtetls, as it were, if that's the right plural, in Europe, and for that matter, the way it was practiced in the Sephardic countries as well. There's a reason for this. The reason is what he expressed. If we want to deserve to live in Israel, we can't rely on leniencies, which is what we always did in Jewish communities and other places, but we need to deserve here, to live here. And he said this specifically regarding the law of Shemitah, which we understand. But he also said it regarding something else, which is what I wanted to share with you. It wasn't just Shemitah. As I said, Shemitah got the biggest response, but he said something else as well. I'm going to cite here from page 43. Ve'ita yedei senat chinam, Nechrav HaBayit Sheni, Shevi Arichut HaGalut HaChal HaZeh. It was taught in the Gemara in Yoma, Daf Tet, that one of the reasons that the temple is destroyed is because of Sinat Chinam. Va'ata, she'anachnu mitzapim u'mikavim u'miachlim li'yishua ayidei she'yityashev artzenu HaKodesh Yisrael. We, again, he's dreaming. It's 1900. There are very few Jews in Israel at this point. And we're dreaming we're going to come back. If we're going to have fights among ourselves, in katigur na'aseh sanigur. He goes, it can't possibly be that redemption is going to come about by Jews fighting with one another and trying to settle the land of Israel. V'sin'at ta'orer midanim chas v'shalom. It's going to bring about dinim, it's going to bring about strictness. Okay, mi shezoche lalot la'artzenu hakodesh, lefi ani edati, it seems to me that anybody who has the merit to come and live in the land of Israel, tzarech mitchila, before you get there, lekabel alav, he needs to accept upon himself, ulasim al libo tamid, constantly has to accept on himself, mitzvat ase shel v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, shezeh klal gadol b'torah. This is the Kotzker Rebbe writing. Again, the grandson of the Kotzker Rebbe, who himself was the Kotzker Rebbe. Well, inyan kima mitzvot tlui pa'aretz, and that's where he goes into this other point as well. She'ish et re'ehu ya'azro v'yechazek oto b'masmerim l'val yemotu chas v'shalom tzorech she'tzayet kol achad l'chaveiro she'yeh mitzumadim yachad zeh k'mo zeh v'dok. He's saying for us to be deserving of living in this land, we need to accept upon ourselves that we love one another as ourselves and therefore to help one another. This is not just something in my heart. It has to be something which is practical. And he says, before you come to Israel, I know some of us have a custom. It's brought down to the Magen Avraham and Siman Mem Vav, that before you start prayer in the morning, you should be accept upon yourself mitzvot aseh shel v'avtarech kamocha. Let's be honest. We should do it not just before we pray. We should do it before we get into our cars. We should do it before we drive. We should do it before we go into a supermarket. We should do it. There are many times in our life, in Israeli life, that we should accept upon ourselves the mitzvah of after kamocha. But he's saying what we need to do this constantly. in order to deserve to live here. If the temple is destroyed because of sinat chinam, the only way we can imagine building it, he didn't use the word avat chinam, because the word chinam over here is, I'm not sure if it's appropriate. And he comes back to this idea on page 55. Lefi shehitkotetut kashem ha'od be'eretz Yisrael tzrichim gdolei teravet tzadikim adarim be'eretz Yisrael la'asot takanot shelo yitgodedu chas v'shanam b'nagana Yisrael. And he goes into really practical descriptions going on again, getting into this point of hastarach kamocha zeklal gubedot Torah u'mikol shkein b'shivat eretz Yisrael. And he goes on to say, we can't possibly get into situations of fighting with one another. And I want to go a little bit further with all of this. I mentioned Rav Amital before. One of the things that he has an essay on loving Jews, and one of the things that he said at the end of the essay, and he didn't bring any proof for it, is he said that if we're going to make it as a country, it's pikuach nefesh that we love one another. It's a very interesting perspective. You know, sometimes when I teach halacha to my students, people in my shul, there's always a challenge, because in halacha there are micro applications of halacha, and then there are macro applications of halacha, and they don't work the same. I can give a whole lecture or two or three or four on macro laws, macro considerations, when we have to look at big pictures on things. Sometimes looking at a small, narrow issue, for example, I'm not allowed to put myself in a situation of danger. Okay, if that's the case, how can I have an army? Every single kid is in a situation of danger. Okay, no more army, because it's pikuach nefesh. But not having an army is pikuach nefesh. Not having people defending us is much more of a pikuach nefesh. So I'm going to say it again. Sometimes when you look at the macro, it overwhelms the micro considerations. And all kinds of rules and all kinds of laws which may apply in a non-army situation become very different in an army situation. And we have to, I'm not saying it's a different Shulchan Aruch. It's different applications because we're dealing with the macro. When I come back to the, again, to try to understand what we just now learned and implications of it, in order to get together and make this country successful, we need to have ahavat re'ah. We need to love one another. We need to have unity. It doesn't mean that we can't have differences. We can have differences, and differences are healthy, and we're allowed to disagree on things, and we're allowed to have healthy debate as long as the debates are in fact healthy. You know, you look at what goes on in Israel in terms of how we disagree with people, it's not the same what's going on in America. America is very frightening right now. There's no discourse anymore. People are unable to have healthy conversations. Each side seems to take the other side and turns them into something which is demonic. It's okay to disagree, but we need to know that we're in the same boat. We need to know that we have unity. We need to know when it really comes down to it. You know, again, the last time we had a war in Gaza, more than 100% of those soldiers drafted came down, reported to duty. I'm at this point too old, but I was down there as well, helping with certain things, and I saw it. And the soldiers who came down are on the right or on the left or in the middle, and religious and anti-religious and everything in the middle. And they were one. And they make fun of one another, and they laugh with one another, and they fight with one another, and they cry with one another, because they know that they're one people. And if you don't know, the Ponovitch Yeshiva was making meals, sending it down to the front. Why? Because they understood. We're one. Their success is our success. And you can have all kinds of ideological arguments on other times, but it's just not appropriate when we are being attacked, when there are rockets which are flying. But it's not just Hilchot rockets. It's not just something that we know need to know and to feel when we're at a time of danger. We're always at a time of danger, but that's not it. The point of the Rebbe Mikotsk was phenomenal. If Sinat Chinam destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, in order to deserve to live here, we have to accept upon ourselves constantly Ahavat Chinam. Or at least Ahavat Re'ach Kamocha. And the way that we have to accept it is in the broadest possible way. Not to say, yeah, but he's not religious or she's not religious and they don't believe and so on. It's completely irrelevant. Past the Holocaust, when Hitler didn't make any distinctions between whether how much you believed or you didn't believe, and even if you were baptized, he didn't really care. Didn't make a difference. When it comes to our sense on a theological level to live together, to deserve to live together, it's going to do a tikkun for the sinat chinam. On a practical level, to be a successful country, We need there to be unity among ourselves, despite any differences, or sometimes because of the differences. I hope that all of us are able to understand love is not chinam. Being descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov already make people, and Sarah Rivka Rachava Leah, already make people deserving of ahava, deserving of love, deserving of our care. But in terms of the macro consideration, coming back to this land, living over here to deserve this, we have no choice. If we want to dream of making this better, we need to feel love towards much more people. May God put love in all of our hearts, and may God let us see the beauty in all other people, that we're able to really love them in the way that they deserve.